Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots, partially solar-powered community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, butters, traps, and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. And we first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. I want to start with an article from the former Secretary of Labor and now professor at Berkeley, Robert Reich, called "Why is the Dow Hitting 10,000 While Everyone Else is Cutting Back?" So how can the Dow be flirting with 10,000 when consumers, who make up 70% of the economy, have had to cut way back on buying because they have no money? Jobs continue to disappear. One out of six Americans is either unemployed or underemployed. Homes can no longer function as piggy banks because they are worth almost a third less than they were 2 years ago. And for the first time in more than a decade, Americans are now having to pay down their debts and start to save. Even more curious, how can the Dow be so far up when every business and Wall Street executive I come across tells me government is crushing the economy with its huge deficits and its supposed takeover of healthcare, autos, housing, energy, and finance? Their anguished cries of socialism are almost drowning out all their cheering over the surging Dow. The explanation is simple. The great consumer retreat from the market is being offset by government's advance into the market. Consumer debt is way down from its peak in 2006. Government debt is way up. Consumer spending is down. Government spending is up. Why have new housing starts begun? Because the Fed is buying up Fannie and Freddie's paper, and government-owned Fannie and Freddie are now just about the only mortgage games remaining in play. Why are healthcare stocks booming? Because the government is about to expand coverage to tens of millions more Americans, and the White House has assured Big Pharma and health insurers that their profits will soar. Why are auto sales up? Because the Cash for Clunkers program has been subsidizing new car sales. Why is the financial sector surging? Because the Fed is keeping interest rates near zero, and the rest of the government is still guaranteeing any bank too big to fail will be bailed out. Why are federal contractors doing so well? Because the stimulus has kicked in. In other words, the Dow is up despite the biggest consumer retreat from the market since the Great Depression because of the very thing so many executives are complaining about, which is government's expansion. And regardless of what you call it, Keynesianism, socialism, or just pragmatism, it's doing wonders for business, especially big business and Wall Street. Consumer spending is falling back to 60 to 65% of the economy as government spending expands to fill the gap. The problem is, our newly expanded government isn't doing much for average working Americans who continue to lose their jobs and whose belts continue to tighten, and who are getting almost nothing out of the rising Dow because they own few, if any, shares of stock. Despite the happy Dow and notwithstanding the upbeat corporate earnings, most corporations are still shedding workers and slashing payrolls, and the big banks still aren't lending to Main Street. Trickle-down economics didn't work when the supply-siders were in charge, and it's not working now at a time when, despite all their cries of socialism, big business and Wall Street are more politically potent than ever. And that's from the former Secretary of Labor, Professor Robert Reich from Berkeley. It was reported by the Federal Reserve during the first week of October that U.S. consumers reduced their debt for the seventh straight month in August. Total seasonally adjusted consumer debt fell $11.98 billion, or at a 5.8% annual rate. In the subcategories, credit card debt fell $9.91 billion, or 13.1%, to $889.41 billion. This is the record 11th straight monthly drop in credit card debt. Non-revolving debt, such as auto loans, personal loans, and student loans, fell $2.1 billion, or 1.6%, to $1.56 trillion. Cash for clunkers probably kept non-revolving credit from falling further. So we're waiting for the September numbers. And from Washington Post staff writer Nancy Trejos, debit is replacing credit. The recession has cooled the American ardor for living on credit. After years of saying, charge it, consumers are more often paying with their debit cards instead. Worrying about jobs, fear of fluctuating interest rates on credit cards, and wariness about spending too much are contributing to the change. People are managing their money in a different way, said David Robertson, publisher of the Nielsen Report, which tracks the credit card industry. You have a situation where those people who have jobs are exhibiting recession anxiety, and they are making more debit transactions. 9 months ago, Allison Chadwick, a public relations representative for a nonprofit organization on Capitol Hill, got a debit card with a MasterCard logo so she could use it anywhere for purchases. Carrying cash was unsafe, she thought, and a debit card would help her manage her spending better. I use my credit cards hardly at all, she said. I don't even carry them with me. Trish Preston, head of U.S. debit for MasterCard, said the changing fortunes of debit and credit tell the story of how the recession has transformed consumer spending. Think about what's happening in the economy, she said. Appliances, furniture, jewelry, these are very sensitive to the economy, and those have generally been credit spending categories. Debit cards, meanwhile, tend to be used for routine necessities such as groceries and gasoline. Those kinds of expenditures are happening, she said. The Federal Reserve said that revolving credit, primarily credit cards, dropped by $6.1 billion in July, or 8.1% on an annualized basis. Debit card usage, meanwhile, has been steadily growing over the years, but has surged in this recession. Credit cards draw on money borrowed at often high interest rates. Debit cards withdraw money from the cardholder's bank account. Visa announced this spring that spending on Visa debit cards in the United States surpassed credit for the first time in the company's history. In 2008, debit payment volume was $206 billion compared with credit volume of $203 billion. MasterCard reported that for the first 6 months of this year, the volume of purchases on its debit cards increased 4.1% to $160 billion in the United States. Spending on credit and charge cards sank 14.8% to $233 billion. Consumers are rational thinking individuals, and they're going to shift their behavior in a way that fits with the current economic situation, said Scott Strumello, an associate with the Oriema Consulting Group, a Long Island-based payment card advisory firm. They're thinking more seriously about it, and many may decide, I'm going to use debit where I can and reserve credit for larger purchases. For three decades, credit cards, which emerged about 50 years ago, but were not in widespread use until the 1970s, have reigned as the preferred mode of payment mostly on big purchases for baby boomers and their children. Before that, people used cash, bank loans, or the installment plan. Baby boomers typically charged responsibly. Their children, who grew up in the mostly prosperous 1980s and 1990s, became dependent on cards from an early age, partially because card issuers marketed heavily on college campuses. Unlike their parents, they tended to see credit card as long-term loans, and they charged too much. An awful lot of kids grew up in a very big house, and they grew up with pretty much everything they wanted. And then they became adults, and their parents, rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly, conditioned them to a set of conditions they could not afford. But the bottom line is the good news that people are starting to go towards debit cards, which is their own money, rather than credit cards, which is borrowing money. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So let's continue with the second segment of the show, which of late I've been discussing the financial CPR, what we need to do when things get really tough. Over the last six or seven shows, I've been talking a lot about bankruptcy as really the final option when everything else has been considered in a responsible fashion. As I get started, I give an important credit to Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi, because many of the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on their work, theories, and books. And I particularly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. I also suggest that people go back to the archives at www.kruufm.com and look under the Life and Debt section so you can review all of the prior shows, which are highly interrelated. One practically builds on the next in terms of the educational building blocks of dealing with debt and helping you not only to overcome it, but to apportion your income in a fashion that can help you build a responsible financial future, having some money and assets according to your likes and desires. So you can go into the archive section and listen to all of those shows. But last week, I was discussing really one of the final strokes, getting back on your feet, which basically is thinking about what happens when it's all over, if in fact you have filed bankruptcy, or on the other hand, you were able to negotiate yourself back from the brink and the crises in your life have passed, such as you're back at work and a paycheck is coming in, or the medical reasons and illness have subsided. So now you're in the position where you can start balancing your money again. And what we want to do is, as I said, stick to the plan, just like white sticks to rice. You go back and you start dealing with your total income, which of course is your net income, and you start paying for your bare necessities, the must-have things that you need, such as your rent or mortgage, your food, your transportation for employment, health insurance. Those are the basic things that you need. And then recognizing, as we've discussed quite a lot in the past, that that should be 50% of your net income. And then after that, you have another 50% of your income, and you want to set aside a little something for the things that you want beyond the bare necessities, getting that 30% of the remaining portion of your income allocated so you can start having some fun and yet also rebuilding your future, with the final 20% or a little more if you can swing it, going towards what we call savings. But really, if you are still in debt because you didn't file bankruptcy, getting your way out of debt and then taking that savings $1 at a time to help rebuild your stability and create a financial future for yourself. Again, now all of this is based on some very elaborate plans, or rather I should say detailed plans, because they're not that complicated. but you should go through the former shows and or the All Your Worth book in particular to understand more in depth how to proceed with this kind of structure and plan. But there were some major points that I started to discuss last week in terms of getting back on your feet. I'll just mention them in bullet points first, and then I'll go into them in a little bit more detail. So one, when the crisis passes, you do an honest assessment of your financial circumstances. Two, you have to be aware of and quite alert to cheaters. Three, you have to stick with cash. Four, you can't be shy. And finally, you have to rebuild your credit the old-fashioned way. You pay for things. So going back to number one, when the crisis passes, do an honest assessment of your financial circumstances. If there have been permanent changes in your money situation, if your new job pays less, or if you lost your health insurance, or a divorce was there and now it's all finalized, then you need to make some permanent changes in your life. You ask yourself the tough questions. First one, is it time to downsize the house? Is it time to downsize the car? How about kids' activities? Can we continue those or do we have to reduce them? You have to watch out for the temptation to look backward. People who evaluate their life in terms of, but we always did this, will absolutely be stuck in financial trouble. If your circumstances have changed permanently, then you have to put the past behind you and get on with building a new life on solid financial footing. Get your money back in balance. As I said, you have to go through the course and set it up for yourself, and then you get it back in balance based on that formula and your plan, and you get on with building the wealth you deserve. So that was the first point. Do an honest assessment of your financial circumstances. The second point is you have to be alert to cheaters. Keep in mind that even if your neighbors don't read your credit report, which they won't, there are professional vultures out there who do. They go onto a online database, either Pacer, which is a public access service, or ACER, which is the automated access to court electronic records, and they discover who filed bankruptcy and contact these people. They try to sell them instant cash, credit repair, new credit cards, deals on automobiles, and all kinds of promotions based on the fact that a person filed bankruptcy. Of course, these are not deals at all. They really do not have anything that you need, so you really should stay away from all of these kinds of so-called opportunities. They're not opportunities at all. They're mostly ways to set a person up again for credit problems. So we want to stay as far away from these kinds of cheats, which are people who are looking to take whatever they can from your hard work. So that was point number two. Be alert to cheats. And point number three is stick with cash. As we talked about in the first segment of the show, we're starting to see that this is naturally happening with a lot of people in our economy. Consumers are getting smarter. They're not looking at credit cards anymore as piggy banks, but they're getting the benefit of plastic using their own savings account as the source of the money. So if your credit is at the level of post-bankruptcy, or because you've reached the brink from the debt challenges you faced and somehow got out of it short of filing bankruptcy, now you start moving ahead with cash. There are some extra bad deals out there for people with bad credit, so you just say no. As I mentioned in the past, I've seen credit cards for my clients that charge a $176 fee for a $200 maxed out credit card. That obviously is not a good deal. yet they're there. The sales pitch is that now you're going to start building your credit again. This is not the way to do it. And as I just mentioned in the cheats category, there are a lot of car salesmen who specialize in selling to people with bad credit. And it's also true that many people need a vehicle and so get seduced by these kinds of salespeople. These people stick you with the car loan with an interest rate as high as can possibly be. So it puts a person right back on a very unsafe highway in terms of their credit. If you really need to buy a car, getting an old clunker for cash is a good deal. Replace it as soon as you get a little more cash and a little better credit rating. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So I'm talking about some steps post-bankruptcy filing or post-financial crisis with the cause of the crisis, like a lost job, having gone away. I'm up to the fourth point, which is don't be shy. And that means deal with people, for example, when shopping for a new apartment. Straightforward and honestly, if you're looking for a new place to live, tell the landlord up front that you've had credit problems, but your life is now straight and you can pay your rent on time. The same advice holds true for anyone else likely to run a credit check. You have to come clean. If you fess up ahead of time rather than shuffle around after it is discovered, they will be much more likely to listen to you and give you a break. And then the fifth point is that you should rebuild your credit the old-fashioned way. You pay for things. Don't try shortcuts because there really aren't any shortcuts. You just have to pay your bills on time. Check out your credit report to be sure that it is accurate, and it may not be, so you have to, if you file bankruptcy, follow up on that within 6 months. Or even if you didn't file bankruptcy, still follow up periodically if things are getting better and you're making your payments. You want to be able to see that on your credit report. But also remember that your health and your sanity are very, very important basics in your life. So you don't lose sleep over what you've been through, the bankruptcy or the crisis. You just let it go. Over time, your credit rating will improve, but in the meantime, you are gaining something much more important, a solid financial future by rebuilding your credit on a cash basis, paying your bills as they come due, and making sure that you are taking care of yourself. You're reducing stress in your life by being rested, eating properly, exercising. All of these things come together that make you such a strong person that dealing with some ups and downs in financial situations are only part of the picture. And they can be actually a small part of the picture if you put it all in perspective. Things do get better. I have a list of very prominent people, famous and rich people, who filed bankruptcy, and many of them were able to not only get back on their feet, but become financial successes again. Donald Trump is an example. Walt Disney is an example. Larry King, Henry Ford, Debbie Reynolds, Mark Twain, P.T. Barnum, and Willie Nelson. So the list goes on and on. And in a way, it's inspiring to see that a fresh start really does mean a fresh start. And if one continues to be healthy and use their creativity and their energy in an optimistic and life-supporting way, one can find themselves reaching their dreams and through them helping the world around them. Because, as I've emphasized, it's not all about money. Of course, you have to be smart with your money, and in a way, not just a little smart, but super smart. And I've told you this throughout the shows. You have to be intelligent in the way you set up your financial life. And if you followed all of the points that have been brought up, you'll see that In some ways, the hard part is really over. You set up a plan for yourself, and the toughest part of it is behind you. We're no longer subscribing to those starve and spend cycles, and that you do not have to live by the pull the belt a little tighter concept, or giving in to the thought that I just don't have enough willpower. I've gone over a lot of very new rules for you, although they're not new rules for successful people in a financial sense. They're rules of balance, mastering principles of balance with respect to one's money. So the bottom line is you've really taken a lot of control of your life with respect to money because you've come up with a smart plan and you've put it to work. And once you've created that kind of setup, the next part is to really stop thinking about money relentlessly. And this can be a surprising point, but during the last year in this course which I've been teaching, we've thought a lot about money. Now I'm saying once you do that, then you really do not have to think about money anymore to the extent you've been obsessed with it. And why is that? Well, it's because money really isn't the objective. The real goal is to get control over your money so that you can put it where it belongs, in the background, basically. In the back of your mind and possibly in your heart, you already knew that this is correct. I don't want you to make all these changes so that money can become the king of your life. You're making changes to get a better life. And as I just said, that's on all kinds of personal and interpersonal levels, not just your wallet or your bank accounts. For many of us, we've spent most of our adult lives worrying about money, but what I've been trying to teach is that it's time to let go of all that worry. And of course, your response may be that that's a little strange. As Professor Warren says, you may feel like you did when you were a kid and lost a tooth. You keep running your tongue around your mouth, trying to see if the tooth still hurts when you wiggle it, forgetting that the painful tooth is long gone. I can't emphasize enough that now is the time to stop worrying and get on with what really matters, your life. No more lying awake at night wondering if your paycheck is going to clear before the mortgage payment or car payment. As I said, if you set yourself up right according to this course, you've covered your bare necessities and those worries are behind you. No more torturing yourself over whether you can afford something. You know the answers now. If you have cash, then you can buy it. And best of all, no more wondering whether you'll ever get ahead. You have a solid plan to build your savings, and before you know it, you will be accumulating some real wealth. So if you feel those old money worries kicking in again, just remember, you do not need to worry. You have mastered your money. You've balanced your money so that you can easily cover all your bills. You created a plan so that you always have some cash in your pocket for some good old-fashioned fun. You're getting rid of your debts once and for all so that monkey will soon be off your back. And best of all, you have laid the groundwork to start making your dreams come true. In other words, you have nothing to worry about and everything to smile about. You got to give yourself permission to worry less and enjoy more because you've earned it. So I'll continue on with some new ideas next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.